The Making Of is sponsored by Misoma.
Every piece of a woman's jewellery tells part of her story. Earrings she bought with her first paycheck, a pick-me-up present from her best friend after a crappy breakup, the matching bracelets they got on that wild holiday, her 18th birthday, her 30th birthday, an anniversary gift she'll never forget. From past loves to career milestones, from morning to night, we wear our treasured moments, whatever shape or size. And Misoma is here for all those moments. They're on a mission to build a more confident, creative and collaborative world, starting a chain reaction, one link at a time. Make your moments last forever with Misoma and get an exclusive 15% by using Make15 now on misoma.com.
Welcome to The Making Of, a podcast from the female lead. I'm Bea Appleby, and in this series, I'll be talking to some of my favourite women about the moments that have made them. The highs, the lows, the life lessons, but I promise we won't call them journeys. My guest this week is quite simply the fastest woman in British history. It's Dina Asher-Smith.
If everything goes right, there is absolutely no reason why I cannot be the best in the world. Things might happen, people might be better than you, that's that. There is no reason why it can't be me.
Dina's career as a sprinter has been a series of firsts. She's the first British woman to win a major global sprint title. And in 2019, she won 3 gold medals at the European Championships, making her the first British woman to ever win a treble at a major event. As a young athlete, she was the world's fastest teenager ever, over 60 metres and 200 metres. And Dina still found the time to get into King's University to study history. A subject that she says has given her a vital perspective on everything she does. And that is exactly the kind of incredibly astute comment that Dina comes out with. She is so wise and inspiring at only 25 years old. Our conversation delved into everything from the psychology of winning, how she deals with racism, and the motivational power of a McDonald's apple pie. So, here we go.
Dina Asher-Smith, welcome to the Female Lead Podcast. We're so honoured to have you here.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. It's an honour to be here.
We're such big fans. So we're going to talk today about the 6 moments that have brought you where you are, that have shaped you, and they're all chosen by you. And we're going to kick off with moment number 1, which is not getting into the secondary school you wanted to be in at the age of 11. Now, what is this moment?
It's, to be fair, it's like, it sounds really random, but it's probably the most one of the most significant moments for shaping kind of who I am ever. So basically, I did like the 11 plus test, which a lot of people do, especially nowadays. And there was just this school that I'd always just kind of taken for granted. I thought I was just going to go to, because I was decent at school, so I just thought, yeah, I'll go to that one, you know, didn't really think anything of it. And then obviously I didn't get the result that I needed first time. Like, I was like, I think I was on the mark or just below the cutoff for entry, and I remember being just so upset. That was the first time, I think, in my life that I just kind of imagined that I would totally do something, and I hadn't really imagined not having what I had envisaged was going to happen. And then my mum and dad were just like, well, in the nicest way, I know you wanted to go, but did you do loads of revision? Did you practice for the test? I was like, a bit, but not like a lot. Like, I could have done more. They were like, did you try hard? Did you double check your answers? Like, you know, that stuff. And they were like, but in the nicest way, Dina, let this be a lesson with whatever happens. Because if you don't work for something like 100%, then you can't just imagine you're going to get it. You might get lucky and you might get it. But if you want to remove all doubt from a decision, you have to try your hardest. And like at that age, I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to try really hard. But then like 2 weeks later, I got in and I was really happy.
And at that point when you were 11, when this happened, were you running then? Had you started?
Oh, I was running. Yeah, I was definitely running at a running club. And I think I knew that I was fast,
right,
in inverted commas, at that point. But I wasn't thinking that it was going to be a career or anything. Like,
right.
I was just like, I like this. But the thing is, at that age, I was really, really sporty. So I was running, but I was also swimming and board diving and playing netball and hockey. And well, my mum trying to beat me in the cul-de-sac outside our house with hockey, because she used to play hockey and
right.
she would never let me win, or playing like with a cut down golf club, trying to hit balls into flower pots with my dad. So I was just super sporty, and I did loads and loads of sports. I was always active, always exhausted.
Do you remember like realizing, oh, actually I'm really fast? Like,
I always knew that I was fast, but when I was younger, when I was about 11 or 8, like, I was fast, but I wouldn't, and I would do well at sports day, but I was one of like a 4 or 5 fast children, you know?
And how much do you believe in like natural talent, and how much do you believe in like the however many thousands of hours of practice?
Oh, okay. That's a really interesting question. Natural talent is obviously like handy. I would literally use the word handy. Depends what sport you're doing. Depends whether it's... I could talk about this all day, because I think there are different elements of natural talent. When people talk about natural talent, they always just talk about how strong are you, how fast are you. Yeah, right, basically mm-hmm. that's it.
Yeah.
And like, so they look at people, children, when they're very young, like the 13-year-olds, and often the ones that had the growth spurts first are often assumed to be the best, but they're mm-hmm. just, they've just grown very quickly. But there's, I mean, you can be very talented in that department, but you can also have a natural talent for improvement, because also a skill in elite sport is the ability to keep improving, because there's no point hitting your best at 18, and you might be fantastic, your best might be fantastic at 18, but by the time you get to 28, you don't want to be running the same times, or you don't want to be at the same skill level. But then there are people who are 18, they would have been nowhere near as good as the quote unquote talented people, but they have an ability to adapt. Their body is very good at growing, it's very good at learning new skills very quickly, and that is definitely a talent. Like, if it can take you 10 minutes to grasp a new skill as opposed to 3 weeks, like, that's a talent. But A, you've got to work hard. Doesn't, you can be as talented and you can be as good at improving, you can be as a brilliant listener, as a coachable athlete, you can have all those perfect things, but if you can't be able to put in the work, you might as well throw it all the way. It's right. Honestly, because it is hard work, it's a job, it's a business, it's a dedication, and it requires a lot of patience and hard work, and if you're not prepared to do that, then park it away, basically end the conversation.
Okay, let's move on to moment two. So moment number two was false starting at the European Youth Olympics, and this is when you were 15. So just before you tell me about that moment, how did you get to that point where you're in the European Youth Olympics?
So obviously I started running when I was about 8 years old, and that was kind of at primary school. They had set up a running club. My friend said, do you want to go? I was like, I'm not actually that interested. My friend said, if you go with me, I'll get you an ice cream from the ice cream van. So I went, obviously. And then I get roped into running. So, but then I went to a local competition. I did quite well. And then I joined a local running club. And then since then, I actually fell in love with the sport. Actually, I fell in love with the friends that I made there and chatting. But then also the sport, because also when you're having fun at that age and you're chatting, you don't notice when you're getting better. And then as I was getting better and better, suddenly it was like, oh, it's time for you to go to a specialist group because we found that you're a bit better at this. I was like, is this friend coming? Yeah, okay, cool.
Right.
And then I started to represent the club and do it a bit more often when I got a little bit older. And then I just ran some fast times. And as you start to run faster times, you become eligible to represent Kent. So that was my county.
Right.
And then if you do well, if you win Kent Championships or you're the best in Kent, soon you'll be able to represent the southeast of England. Then you can represent there. Then you might go to the whole English schools as representing Kent, or UK school games representing southeast of England. And next thing, you can represent England if you win that. And then gradually you just keep going up as you win and you get faster. So I was I went to the European Youth Olympics, I think, because I had run the time that I needed to run, and I had I'd won a few things on the way, I guess, so I got my Team GB selection. But yeah, I remember I was 15, that was my first ever international competition. I was so nervous, and I first started, I remember being like, oh, I was really upset. I think most of my moments are me being really upset.
Oh, no. Well, actually, they're the best moments. So what was the... Well, I guess they're the ones you learn something. So just explain for people listening and for me, like, what does a false start mean in that situation?
So basically, it was, well, for people that are listening, we all know on your marks get set and you move before they say go to get disqualified. And I remember they'd literally just changed the rules. So we used to have like two tries, like an amber and then a red, but then it went straight to red. And then I was really nervous and I shook and it was, and I got full start. So I just got disqualified. So you get pulled out the race and the race runs without you. Yeah.
Oh my,
I remember
God.
Being really sad. Yeah. And that was the one competition that my mum hasn't been to because she couldn't go. I remember she couldn't go to Turkey or something. I can't remember. She just couldn't go. And that's the only competition in my entire career that either my mum or my dad has not been at.
Right.
And I remember that, I think for her, the idea that I was on the phone like, "Mom, crying, I want to come home." She was like, "Oh no."
Oh no, yeah, so typical. That's the one she's not there
yeah,
for.
Yeah, I know.
And so looking back at this moment, how do you think it shaped you? Like,
well, I think it was the fact that I had to get over it quickly. Because I was very upset and I could have done really well, but I was very upset. And then for a little bit, I was really scared. Because when you're that age, I was scared of doing starts for a bit. Not scared, but I was scared that it was going to happen again. Because I didn't really understand that I was just nervous and full started. I was like, oh no, this is me now. Oh no, no, you know. And then I had a competition like a few months later, the Commonwealth Youth Games, where I was going to run for England. And I was like scared that I was going to do it again. And my coach at the time was like, look, you're going to have to race again. Just because that went wrong like once doesn't mean it's going to happen. Like what happened then doesn't define what's going to happen in the future. Like I know you can win Commonwealth Youth Games, blah, 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 but you have to do well and you have to perform well. Like, and my coach was there. He was very much like, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And I think that kind of whole process from full starting to then a few weeks later having to like battle this mini thing yeah. that I'd created in my head and then went on to win the Commonwealth Youth Games. It was, I think overall, it was when I was younger, it was going, oh yeah, just because something went wrong then doesn't mean it has to dictate how things go.
How do you cope with you having to like have that mental focus where you want to win so badly, but at the same time not crumble if you don't get it? Like, how does that work?
It's about self-esteem and self-confidence, and I think that is actually a very good topic because I think that's something that a lot of people have difficulty with particularly. But I think it's about identity. I know it sounds really, might sound silly, but it's about identity for me. So for me, I know that if I win stuff, I'm really happy because that's exactly what I wanted to do. That's what I worked hard for. That's my aim. That's my dream. Dean is super happy, right? But if I don't, I will be sad because I didn't achieve what I wanted to achieve. But it doesn't make me any less of a brilliant athlete. It doesn't make any of my efforts and my hard work less valid. It doesn't change the fact that I might have achieved some fantastic things. Well, unless I ran like not very good, then I'm going to give myself a real telling off. If I threw it away by doing something silly, that's another discussion. But right. If I honestly performed the best of my ability and you just came second, like, I'm sorry, like, you know.
Yeah.
You don't want it to happen and you train really, really hard. Mm. So your best is the best.
Yeah.
But in the off chance that your best isn't the best, there's always another opportunity to win and there's always another opportunity to perform. But I just know that if things don't go my way, it doesn't change who I am as a person.
That's really interesting. And I think what we're going to come on to next, some of the things we're going to talk about next, I think might play into this. So let's go on to moment three, which is the bronze medal at the World Championships in 2013, age 17. Now, this would be a huge moment for anyone. What did it mean for you?
It was obviously huge because that whole year was a whirlwind for me. So yeah, age 17, I had just won the European Junior Championships and I just thought that was going to be the end of my season. I was really happy. I won. Yeah, go back to go on holiday, you know. Yeah, happy, happy, happy. You know, basic, boring things. Getting ready for sixth form, you know. Just normal things. I was happy. And then I knew that for a few months, my coach had been making me practice relay in training, which was a bit odd, but me being me, I didn't really pay much attention to it. It's not my business. I just did what I was told.
Right.
And I was still training after the championships again, which was a bit weird, but I remember thinking, I want to go on holiday, but whatever, I'm doing what my coach tells me to. And then one day I got a call to say, hi, it's the coach from the GB senior team. You've been selected for the World Championships and we want you to run at the anniversary games in the London Olympic Stadium. Do you want to? I remember being like, what? Like, yeah. And I said to my coach, I was like, oh my God, because I didn't even, he knew, because my coach and my parents know far more than me, but right. at that point, and it was, I didn't even know it was selection day. So when I got a phone call from this number, I was like, this is weird. But my coach was like, ooh, like, because I was at training. So I was just like, whatever. And I didn't, and I came back to my coach like, oh my God, I'm going to the World Championships. He's like, yay. I thought it was going to happen. I was like, he didn't tell me. He was like, I just wanted to see, you Aww. Know, I was like, I'm not ready. He's like, yeah, you are. We've been practicing for ages. I was like, oh yeah. I was like, we have doing those little drills. He was like, yep, you've been doing them every week for a few months now. I was like, oh, okay. And so I went to World Championships. I didn't really know many of the girls. And, I remember being quite nervous, and I remember at 17, lots of them being far older than me. I was really fortunate that they all took me under their wing. They're people that I'm definitely friends with now as well. I remember that there was a strike six, and I kind of assumed that I was going there to learn, you know, as a young kind of up and coming athlete, I thought I was going to go in there and learn and have a great time, but not really run. I got put into the strike four, which is the team that actually runs. And I remember being like, oh, wow. Okay. So not only did I not expect to be on this trip in the first place, then suddenly I was running in the World Championships. And then we actually finished fourth, but then one of the teams above us got disqualified. So we got upgraded to a bronze medal. And I remember just being like, this is the craziest moment of my life. And I think at that point, I was the youngest ever medalist. I remember being absolutely petrified. And that moment stands out for me. That whole period stands out for me for a number of reasons. I was petrified. And I remember I have never felt that scared in my life. And every moment, I mean, I don't need to use it anymore, but certainly for the two seasons afterwards, when I was doing quite big things for the first time, when I won my first World Juniors, and then when I went to my first senior championships for an individual birth, I remember being nervous. And I would tell myself, look, Dina, you are not the 17-year-old that you were in Moscow. You don't need to be this nervous, because you were so nervous, so not unprepared, but so just kind of like a deer in headlights. You are not that girl anymore. So why are you nervous? You were successful then, you can be successful now. Going and getting a bronze medal at the World Championships at 17, it put me in the hat for BBC's Young Sports Personality of the Year. At that point, I'd always seen track as like something that was very important in my life and I was obviously going to stick with, but I was going to go to uni, prioritize academic performance over athletic performance. And obviously my coach wasn't keen on that, but my coach is not the kind of person that likes to control people's lives, so he was like, okay. But to make the World Championships every year, it's literally like the top 1% of who runs, and then the winner is the 0.01% of the whole 1%, the championships, you know. So if you just look at it from a statistical point of view, it's incredibly difficult to make a career out of it, because it's not like when you win, a team doesn't win, 11 people don't win, a squad of 40 doesn't win, like one person wins every 4 years. And you know, when you look at it like that, and you're just being somebody who wants to make a stable living, you're like, you know, like the odds are never in your favor. You know, and you might be as talented as you like, but you can get injured, you can do this, you can do that. So at that point for me, it was just the more intelligent decision to obviously not put all your eggs in one basket.
And so you chose to actually go to university anyway. While you were an incredible athlete, you're also academically incredibly gifted.
On
as
a good
well.
Day. Thank you.
Yeah, but you went to King's and you did history, and you chose to do that, like you said, not putting all your eggs in one basket. I think that's really an interesting decision, because it's not about not backing yourself. It's about also being pragmatic about, like you say, the statistics, the likelihood, the probability.
But it might be fantastic. You can rip your hamstring off and be find it very difficult to run again. You could still have been a fantastic athlete, but it's just, unfortunately, you had the accident and now that career is not for you. So it's,
And it's a very, very sensible decision, because a lot of those people who have that happen to them are then crushed forever, aren't they? Like, beyond belief.
And that's how you crumble, when everything is your identity is pinned on one thing. And especially with that one thing being so fickle and unstable, you need to understand who you are and all of that stuff outside of the sport as well, if you don't want to crumble.
I read you talking about how studying history has really helped you in all areas of your life. Tell me about that. It's fascinating.
I am a big, big fan of people doing history, obviously, as a history student, because it's fascinating just from what the degree taught me as a skill set. It's given you great critical thinking skills, great analytical skills. It's made you very empathetic because you have to be able to understand all sides. You don't have to agree, but you have to be able to put yourself in somebody else's shoes. You have to be able to sniff out stuff that doesn't seem right, which is also very helpful in life. but most importantly, I think it's given me, particularly with sport, it's given me a sense of perspective, because I remember when I was having some of the kind of more the part of my career that I was always pushing on new territories. So like my first ever international, first ever senior medal, first ever individual senior, all these things that are quite scary to younger athletes. I was doing that alongside being in uni and reading about cholera and reading about wars, death toll, racism, sexism. 100 years ago, people couldn't do that. 100 years ago, this was happening. 100 years ago, this many million people died, you know? So it's quite sobering. It's not fiction, it's fact, it happened. And it's one of those things where it's like, look, you know what? I'm so grateful that the most stressful thing in my life right now is how fast I run from A to B. I am so grateful that something I love, I get to do every day. And yeah, a really bad day might be me not running the way I wanted to. It might be me coming second in the race. Oh my God, you know, like, but when I was doing that alongside learning about, there was the Underground Railroad where people were literally sneaking out the night for their lives, you know, there were wars, famine, people, escaping, people setting themselves on fire on protest, you know. It really does put everything into perspective, and it makes me very grateful. And sometimes that sense of perspective and distance at times really helps when stuff is a lot, because of course I take it seriously, but you can't take it too seriously. You're not saving anybody's life.
Another thing that I read you were talking about is like how your history education has given you like a pronounced sense of your place in history as a black woman, as an athlete. And you wrote really eloquently and really bravely recently that great column in The Telegraph about Black Lives Matter and about your experiences of racism. Was that painful for you to write?
Definitely. Thank you very much. That was difficult for me to write, because every time I went to write it, I was just like, it's really painful to think about and painful to remember. And so I think that period for a lot of people was emotionally tiring and draining and very difficult anyway, particularly black people in that moment, because not only were we dealing with a pandemic, then we're all at home on our phones anyway, and then you're seeing this and it's bringing up this memory and this memory, and you turn the TV and it's there, you turn the radio and it's there, you go outside, it's all anybody wants to talk about, WhatsApp is all anybody wants to talk about. And that was the same for like 3 weeks. So it's something that normally you'd be like, this is awful, it's horrific, and but you would try and emotionally be like, you know, breathe and get through, and that moment you couldn't, because it was absolutely everywhere. So it was very it's difficult, but obviously I'm really happy that I did it. I was happy it was well received, because when I was writing it, I was kind of writing it in the mind of writing to people who kind of don't normally engage this kind of stuff, because at the end of the day, I don't need to be writing to other black people, because we're all on the same page. Like, we all know what it feels like. So I wasn't, in my head, I wasn't writing to people that look like me and have been through the same experiences as me, because I don't need to, you know? Like, what more is there to say?
In that column, the part where you talked about what your parents had told you as a young child about, you know, how you needed to behave to not get into trouble in life, was so powerful. I thought it was so and powerful, but also painful to have to share that. And I just thought it was really amazing that you did.
I do remember times when I've got into really big trouble for doing something. And obviously as a child, you're like, I don't get it. Like, Sophie did it. Like, Sophie, my friend. Yeah, I was like, Sophie did it. I don't get it. And my mum's like, I know. But please, like, just when you're by yourself, just don't do that. Because I know you might be going in your bag because you want your purse, or you might want your phone, or you might want a chewing gum, or, well, now, face mask now. But you've got to understand that some people won't always interpret that the same way. And it's not right, it's wrong. But sometimes, look, it's just easier if you've got to go in your bag at the counter or outside the store. Just if you're looking around.
Because people would think you're stealing. That was the point, right?
Yeah. And like, it's actually, and at first, you know, when you're younger, you think, oh, mum's being well paranoid. Like, do you know? You know, when you're a child, you're like, oh. And then no, I've definitely experienced, yeah, I don't want to go into detail. Yeah, 100% it's true. 100% multiple times. And I'll be like, honestly, I was just going to get a tissue. And then, yeah. So.
And you can see how that is so draining over time to have to deal with that.
I don't say little things, they're not little things, but it's just, racism is a huge topic, but part of it is the fact that you have to adapt circumstances every single day. I mean, I think the thing that most people relate, I guess most women could relate to, it's about not walking out at night. Or being with somebody, or having keys in your hand, or you know, it's that behavior. But obviously, as a black person, it's different small change to behavior to protect yourself, but also as a black woman, you've got both, like,
yeah. Intersectionality.
exactly. That was a big essay in uni, and I remember when I ticked that off, I was like, great, done. That's a confusing topic, but we got it done.
I hope you're enjoying the podcast so far. I just want to take a minute to tell you a bit more about The Female Lead. We're a charity founded by Edwina Dunn, exploring the factors that limit women's success and fulfillment. By listening to women and understanding them through research and data, we aim to influence businesses and government to drive real change. We're passionate about telling women's stories, and that's what this podcast is all about. So please do rate and subscribe at the end. It will really help us to continue our work and tell more women's stories.
Let's go on to moment number four. So this was breaking your foot in February 2017. Oh, that is a sad thing to happen. What happened?
I was chatting away. I was in gym. I wasn't completely concentrating, getting ready to race. I was doing my plyometric drills. So I was just jumping from the floor onto a bench as part of my training. And quite simply, I was chatting, not paying full attention. And instead of jumping on top of the bench, it was a bench with like a metal rim. I just jumped and I hit the top of my foot under the bench, just full power. Yeah, I know. Yeah, honestly, like an accident. It was very annoying, very painful. At first I fell over. I was more embarrassed than I was in pain. Then I realised, oh no, I cannot stand on my foot anymore. I was like, no, not only is this now humiliating, I am now lying here like, So I think the biggest thing that I learned from that was, again, it was the process. So I had a home world championships in August of that year, and I broke my foot in the February. So that was 5 months to make the major championship. And obviously, I knew that the kind of fracture that I did, it's taken some people 2 years, 3 years to get back from. And I was like, no, that doesn't work for my time scale, unfortunately. I told myself that I was going to go and try and get a medal at the World Championships. So we have to get back in 5 months. And my whole team and everybody looks at me like, you're absolutely nuts. I was like, hey, if I try and fail, then whatever. As long as I've left every stone unturned, then worst thing that I can do is I don't make team because I broke my foot. Perfectly valid, right?
Yeah.
So I remember I had an operation, and I just remember that was a very, it was a very tough time in my life, because at the same time I was doing my dissertation, because it was my last year of uni.
Oh, yeah.
And so I had a few exams and a few final essays to do. And I remember having my operation, having the anesthetic kind of wearing off in my head, lots of pain, having to keep my foot above my hip or my heart or whatever it is just for the swelling, and trying to get my first dissertation draft in, and my head
was
screaming at me because I was at that bit where I was woozy, because I had like a week after I came out of surgery. And I remember being like, oh my word, this is going to be a crazy few months. And it was, because I finished uni, but then I also had to learn how to walk, jog, run, and then sprint at a world-class level in about 5 months. I had to go to the trials. I had to make the team. I know. And it was good though. I went to the World Championships, and it was honestly It was, I think it was probably one of the pivot. The next three, I think, in our list is a pivotal turning point for me. And I think that was a turning point in my career because I went and I missed out on a bronze medal in the 200 by like 0.08 seconds. And I was fuming. I was absolutely fuming because I was like, oh, I just missed a medal. I was so upset. And my coach was literally like, how are you upset? You broke your foot. You learned how to do all this stuff in 5 months. You finished uni. It's only a few, like 2 weeks ago, did I feel normal pushing out of blocks, like normal. Because before I've been able to push out of them without re-breaking the foot, but it wasn't normal.
Oh my God.
But I know. But 2 weeks before, I've been like, yay, I can push off both feet. And my coach was like, oh God, but yeah, okay, whatever. I know, my coach was definitely going along with my crazy plan at this point, making sure I didn't hurt myself. But he was like, I'm just letting this child do what she needs to do. But yeah, and then I was fuming and he was literally like, Dina, you've got to believe now that after you've done all this, you've got to believe that the next World Championships you can win. And before that, I'd always been one of those people that's like, yeah, I hope I can do well. I think I can win. I should be able to win. But I didn't have that, like, no, this mine. Like, I didn't have that, it's mine. And afterwards, I was like, yeah, you know, you're right. Like, I literally didn't run for, like, months. And somehow I got almost got a bronze. So if everything goes right, there is absolutely no reason why I cannot be the best in the world. Like, things might happen. People might be better than you. That's that. But, like, there is no reason why it can't be me. And that was a big thought process change for me. And, yeah.
That's just a great lesson. I love it. I can do it. Okay. So, and then let's go on to moment number five, which is the Commonwealth bronze in 2018. What is this moment? What happened?
I was pissed. Yeah, I shouldn't. This is after I've done the whole I can do it. And yeah. I still came third. I was so angry. I worked really hard and I still came third. And I was just really annoyed. And I think that was, the overriding feeling from that championships is that everybody puts a lot into everything, but it was in Australia. I did a whole training camp out there. I really went for it. And obviously, it doesn't matter if you go for it or not. If you're not the fastest, you're not the fastest, right? Yeah. But at the end of the day, but I just remember being really angry. I was really upset. And my coach was like, carry that anger forwards.
Right.
But which I did. And then I got 3 goals at the Europeans a few months later, so I was happy.
Yeah. So what was the lesson then from that moment?
I don't know. It was just the emotion of anger. I think I just became a little bit more cold, a bit colder when it came to performing, a bit colder. Even though I've always been very focused, I've become a little bit more like, I'm here to win. I'm here to do a job.
And part of that is probably about just getting older as well, right? Just getting more serious about everything. So in this year, you also became Britain's fastest woman, which is quite an accolade. That was in August, right? It was at the European Championship.
I think I became fastest when I was like 19 because I broke the British records. Yeah, so 2015.
Oh, really? But
I think the PR spin for, not for me, but from other people started then. I was like, you could have said this a few years ago.
Oh, because it said it, because what I read was that the European, because they said you broke the records at the European Championships for 100 metres and 200
metres.
But I
also broke them in 2015.
It was old
news. I know. No, it's okay. I know, but that's what I mean. I think I just did it at a higher profile moment, right, if I'm being honest.
Right. And at the time, you said it was really important to you to inspire girls. Why is that? Tell me about why that's so important to you.
Because, I'm a girl. And I feel like whenever I speak to young girls, sometimes, I don't know, I think it mainly came because I've had a few, personally for me, sad experiences when I talk to young girls in school. Because obviously chatting to kids is so much fun. Like, often they ask you, are you faster than Sonic? Can you beat Usain Bolt? Can you run faster than the bus? It's like, yeah, it's no, sometimes, you know, like, fun. But then some people ask me, I don't think I could be an athlete because, like, I just don't think, like, there is jobs out there for women in sports. So I'm like, that's categorically not true. Some people say, I don't want to do sports because I don't want to look muscly. And people tell me that looks ugly. I'm like, that's categorically not true. Once I had an 8-year-old girl ask me if she was too fat and she needs to go and exercise. I know. And I was like, obviously that was heartbreaking. Categorically not true. And I've just had so many moments when, because I really do enjoy speaking to young people, but when they've, in all their innocence, you know, really ask me some questions that shows us that there's something, I don't know, sometimes there's things, we need to be careful with our messaging and how we inspire them. Because if at 8 years old, you're asking me if you need to exercise because you feel like you're fat, which is absolutely insane. But I think it's, and at 8 years old, that's not the child's fault. It's the society. It's what we're telling these young girls, and we're making somebody feel at eight that not only they're not good enough, or not only they need to change the way that they are, which is categorically not true and categorically incredibly sad, but also we're telling them that exercise and activity is a punishment, that the only reason you should be doing sport is out of a place of wanting to change your body, rather than, I've got loads of friends at this club, I can go have a laugh, or, oh, I want to win this tournament, let's see if I can do it, or, you know.
Or it's fun.
It makes me feel good. Yeah, exactly. Like, so it's about so many attitudes to everything, and so I do want to inspire young girls, to just be their most unapologetically vibrant selves and not care what anybody is trying to tell them or anybody is trying to think. And if you want something, go and get it. You're going to have to work hard. It won't always be easy. There's going to be ups and downs. Like, you know, all those, it's life, you know, not everything goes according to plan first time. If it did, it would be boring. Yeah. But that you can have everything you want and you don't have to change who you are.
And as a woman in sport, do you feel that there is an issue with, like, sexism and gender inequality or not?
Yeah, definitely. 100%. It's complex and interesting. Mm. We definitely need more women in sport, more women in sport, the business of sport. That's where I would go first.
Right, yeah.
The business of sport. And I think more women in the business of sport, or at least people who think with women in mind, or think with the women's market in mind, it would transform everything. Mm. It would transform. Because at the end of the day, sport is entertainment, right? And I have said that so much. Yeah. But sport is entertainment. How do you make it a business, and how do you get people to do it? By making it visible, right? And you can't say that women aren't active or women don't do stuff, because that's not true. Mm. Don't get me wrong, we can do more. We always need more, but that's not true. I think the idea of what constitutes sport is incredibly gendered, because people don't even like including dance in what sport is. I know I can't dance for an hour.
Oh,
I'm tired.
Oh my God.
I can't do Pilates or yoga. Yeah. That's hard. I can't. Yeah. Pilates is hard. It's really hard. Yeah. But
when I watch Strictly, I'm like,
It's exhausting. These are like elite athletes. They're insane. Do you know what I mean? Yes, it is. Your carbs, you know how strong your feet and your carbs are going to have to be that coordinated, your balance, your proprioception, yeah, concentration. You know, people, like, some sports, to be agile and stuff, they do dance to, like, be agile and be coordinated. But I think the idea of, not only that is gender, but also the fact that, yes, Women can play football. They do play football. Fantastic at football. Women's football is as entertaining as men's football. Why? Because it is people kicking a ball around and scoring goals. That is what you want to see. You back a team and you pull off the moves and you see. You can tell that I'm not a huge football person. Yeah. But you can see. We pick a team to win. Why is that gendered? Mm. Why? Yeah. Why? Why are some of these sports gendered? There's absolutely no reason why. Because at the end of the day, it is entertainment. You watch something, you are entertained. Mm. Being entertained by something does not hinge on gender. And that comes down to, but that also comes down to marketing and the business of sport.
Yeah, absolutely. So as a woman in sport, and talking, as you were before, about the pressure of how to look a certain way that girls feel and that women feel, like, there seems to me a pressure, even though it's got nothing to do with your job, to look good for women athletes in a way that there isn't for men. Do you think that's the case?
Ooh, that's actually a really good question. I'd say this is when I have to push back against that a bit, because yes and no, because I get irked a bit with this, because I think that sometimes it's a trope that people like to put on sportswomen. I look good for me. I look good to perform. It's like, you know, Rihanna's Fenty Beauty.
Yeah.
You know, her tagline is, I'm wearing makeup for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not wearing makeup to hide anything, to cover anything. I've got pink cheeks because I want pink cheeks. I've got green eyeliner because I want green eyeliner. Right. Yeah. So for me, when I put on a full face makeup, if I'm going to run, well, when I'm going to run, it's because this is my moment and I want to feel fabulous, and this is how I feel fabulous. Mm. My performance, it does not hinge categorically on what I look like. So this is when I actually want to say no. Mm. But I think that comes from me, who's quite a confident person. So I don't think the answer would be the same for everybody, but I'll say no, because at the end of the day, if I cross the line first, I don't care what I look like. Mm. I couldn't give a flying what I look like if I win the race. It does not matter. And quite frankly, nobody cares what each other's looking like. It's, you want to win. But if I want to look and feel fabulous while I win, I have the right to do that.
Yeah.
And that is not because somebody's put a gendered box on me.
Right.
It's because I want a cat eye. Like, I want a winged cat eye. That's what I want. Like, that's what I want. It's part of my process. Like, when I'm doing my makeup, it's actually a way for me to keep calm, because if I do my makeup for an hour before I go to race, I can't be nervous and shaking doing my makeup. Like, I have to be calm. So it's part of my psychological process.
That's interesting.
But, yeah, but I'm not doing it because I care what, I don't know, Timothy in the crowd thinks.
Right.
If he likes my cat eye, I do not care. I want to win the race. And I know if I want to win the race, I have to feel as good as possible.
Right.
And in that, for me, that includes glittery eyes sometimes. Sometimes I might wake up and not want it. So that's that.
It's really interesting about the makeup being part of, like, preparing to win. I love it.
100%. For me, but for some people, it's not.
Yeah. So let's move on to your final moment, which is moment 6. Winning the World Championship gold in 2019, a huge moment. How did it feel?
It felt, you know what, it was good. But, you know, I didn't have, you know, I know it sounds bad. I'm going to say really something really funny. But, you know, like, when you do something that you always wanted to do, you expect this, like, big, like, fireworks, this, like, I don't know, this, what is it, singing in the rain moment where you're like spinning around a lamppost. It was just like, cool. I was like, oh, I feel the same. And everybody was asking me, how does it feel? I was like, yeah, it was great. And I said to my coach, I was like, I literally feel no different. He was like, what did you expect? Like, you to have a halo around you for the rest of your life? I was like, no. But don't get me wrong, it is absolutely amazing. And yeah, I'm just really proud, because it's something that I think coming into the sport when I feel like I felt very nostalgic for like a month afterwards, because when I came into the sport at 8 years old, or when I was like 11 or 13 or going through this stuff, there is no way I thought I was going to be a world champion. I'd love to have been. I really wanted to be, you know, I was aiming for it, but like I didn't actually envisage it. And then when I got there, I was like, oh, quite like this, I'd like to get some more. But I was like, oh, I did what my 8-year-old self would literally be like jumping up and down, clapping, crying about. And I'm like, oh, I got there, now what next, you know? So it was definitely an amazing moment, but I think more than anything, it made me want to do more, I think.
And then you went straight into a year of no sport, hardly at all. How, I mean, we don't want to go on about that too much because it's so depressing, but like, how did you cope with 2020, no sport? I mean, how did that affect your sense of self?
I've been all right, to be fair, but I think it's because so much of who I am as a person exists outside of running. Compared to a lot of people, I think I've been okay. And for me, it's because I'm also quite pragmatic. When there was a pandemic coming, I was a bit in denial for a bit. Like, my physio and my coach, I remember one day they were like, oh, I'm not sure about the Olympics. I was like, negativity, we don't tolerate that here. I know, what a naive child. I was like, no, it's gonna be fine, there's too much money in it for it to not, it's gonna be fine, go and run, like, stubborn. And then a few weeks later I was like, oh yeah, you know what, it's not gonna happen. But I was never like really sad or anything, don't get me wrong, I want it to happen, but it's just that realism of it's a pandemic.
Mm.
People are passing away, and if that means that we have to wait a year to see who's the fastest from A to B, then so be it. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's your history again, isn't it? It's your, it's training.
Perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. Sense of perspective again. Dina Asher-Smith, you are like the wisest woman who I've ever spoken to. You're so awesome. I want you to be Prime Minister.
Oh, no, do not want that. I believe... No, so you might. Free tampons for everybody. Yeah, you might. No, I'm joking.
Good.
Yeah, great.
So I'm going to ask you one final question before I let you go. And this is, when you look back on all your moments in life, is there one moment of, like, pure happiness that you go to when you need to, like, feel calm or go to a happy place?
Oh, that's an excellent question.
Thank you.
Do you know, it's going to be so sad. Do you know what my happy place thing is?
Go on.
It's eating an apple pie. I know. That's the only thing. So basically, when I've got a really hard session, like I'm running and like I'm just in so much pain, I've just used this trick where I just decide not to think about the pain anymore. And I just zone out and I just think about apple pie.
And now I think I've read this. It's not normal apple pie, is it? It's a certain kind of apple pie.
Yeah, I love McDonald's apple pies. It's really bad. My grandma's nickname for me is, my middle name is Dina Apple Pie Asher-Smith, like from my grandma.
And do you get to eat them?
No.
Oh,
I mean, that's why it's a good thing to think about. Yeah, because if it's too real, then it's not escapism.
Yeah, that's so true. But that's so gutting. Like when you're, you know, when you're not an athlete, you imagine, oh, they must get to eat so much because they're running all day. But no.
No. I mean, it is about being healthy and it's about, it's to be fair, diet. I love food. So it is one of the things that if I could just like eat whatever I want and it not affect performance, I 100% would. But you've got to be healthy, man. It's the name of the game. So yep. It is what it is.
And that's the end. I hope you had a good time. Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed this, please do rate and subscribe. We'll be back next week with another brilliant woman's story. If you want to know more about The Female Lead, please check out our website at thefemalelead.com or our Instagram or our Twitter or Facebook or TikTok or LinkedIn. You name it, we're there for you. See you next time.